all my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life.
Welcome to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM, 1510 AM. Darren's back on his minute restrictions. He's back at his house. I am Sterling Holmes live in studio. Darren has a nice setup, though. I'll give him that. He's got the nice ESPN Kansas City banner behind him. He's got the wood paneling looking fancy. He's got his KU shirt on. Again, you can listen to us on 94.5 FM, 1510 AM, 1510.com, Facebook Live. And on Facebook Live, Darren's rocking the KU polo, which is a bold choice after last night.
Yeah, trust me, I was looking for another shirt, but you know what? I had on initially, I had a little gate sauce on, so I had to take it off. So I had to put on something clean. Look, one thing, of course, you know, Michelle, I had to listen to our fearless leader, Talib. We said, Darren, go home, rest up, and do the show from now. And now, for people who are watching online, the reason why I kind of look kind of slanted because I have my legs propped up. I have to have my leg elevated. So that's what I'm doing right now. So, yeah. I mean, you can't really tell, but just so, you know, instead of me sitting up perfect or whatever, I got a little gangster lean going on. That's what it is. But all that being said, hey, got a lot of football and sports to talk about today.
You know what? But first, we both had good lunches. You had Gates and I had Mugs Up out in Independence. So you and me both had some good lunches. I get to Independence. I'm trying to pick up my real estate sign. I find out someone stole it, and I go, they're not getting me down. I'm not going to let this ruin my day. So I went and got Mugs Up root beer, so I'm feeling pretty good. But we'll talk a little KU later. I do want to talk a little Chiefs because the news surrounding Patrick Mahomes, I think, is obviously what everyone wants to hear, at least right now. Yeah. Sounds like he is trending in the right way. It sounds like it's not official, but he's trending in the right way. It sounds like there's been talk of him going to practice tomorrow, which is Wednesday, according to sources, that he is going to be at practice tomorrow. And if he practices tomorrow, that obviously means he passes all the protocols. You know, Jay Glazer has said it's more of a pinched nerve situation where he got knocked out, not necessarily a concussion. We talked about it yesterday, how they haven't really come out and said concussion protocol. At least Andy Reid of the Chiefs haven't. But it sounds like Mahomes is trending in the right direction.
Well, remember, so I told you, when it all went down that unless the rapture comes and Jesus comes back, that Patrick is starting underneath the center in Sunday's AFC Championship game. His head never made contact to the ground. I think that's the thing that people keep getting mistaken. You know, just because he's in what they call concussion protocol, he doesn't have to actually have a concussion to go into the protocol of concussion. You can have concussion like symptoms or something to that, because look, taking a big hit, and even let's just say for the sake of discussion, Patrick would have gotten hit in the head, but it would have been like shoulder, just one of those NFL type hits where you get hit with the shoulder pad. I mean, okay, you just get knocked out. You kind of get knocked woozy. Well, they just take you over to the side and they run the tests and stuff to make sure that you don't have it. And so obviously they would take you out the rest of the ball game. But look, this is, I don't want people getting too freaked out about it, because if Patrick could not go, I think Andy, you know, for the most part, as coy as the Chiefs are and their PR are, they know there's something like this because of the ramifications of it. They wouldn't play with his health like this. So I do expect Patrick to play, to start, and, you know, we'll just – and to me, I think this is all just good discussion fodder. Yeah. For sports radio and television throughout the week.
And to be honest with you, if he comes out and practices tomorrow, then there we go. Well, realistically, find out tomorrow, you know, how far along he is. Because if he practices, that means he's playing. That means he passes all the protocols.
Well, you know, but see, I could also see a situation where Andy holds him out of practice tomorrow where he would normally speak to the media. Patrick speaks to the media on Wednesday. So you could easily hold him out tomorrow, allow Chad Henning to, you know, speak to the media, and then Patrick returns on Thursday and then doesn't address the media until Sunday after the game.
A little mind games. You know what I'm saying? Doing a little mind games. Patrick does have that. He does have that toe injury. Andy Reid said that should not be a problem. Although I will say that toe injury, It didn't, I wouldn't say, affect Mahomes on his run. He looked awkward running the ball. But, I mean,
he looked awkward running, period, man.
Come on.
I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just saying
he has
an awkward run. That's all.
And it's not the most sleek motion, but that toe was noticeable. And I think it was noticeable on a couple of throws. On the short left throws, he short-armed it, and it looked like he couldn't get anything on the ball because of his foot. He was noticeably trying to throw off of his back foot, which for him isn't that big of a problem compared to most quarterbacks. But do you think this toe injury is going to have some lingering effects if he's able to go?
No, not at all. I don't know where it started. I don't know. I thought someone might have stepped on his foot or something. But it looks as though he just might have been turned around a little differently in the game Sunday. But no, I don't think. Well, one, put it like this: when he suffered a hit and he ran up the tunnel to go to the locker room, I think right then and there, kind of showed that one, he didn't have a concussion, and two, the issue with his toe, was long gone by that time, because that happened in the first half.
Yeah.
And I don't think we really saw any symptoms of it in the second half of the game before he got hurt.
Yeah, honestly, his run into the locker room was the most comfortable he looked running the entire time. I do want to bring up this point, because we didn't touch on it too much yesterday, and that is on the play that Mahomes ran. I didn't see many people complaining when he did the exact same play, that speed option, and scored a touchdown. But I saw a lot of people complaining after the injury and said, why is he running? I honestly don't have a huge problem with him running. More so, my main issue is I think they are scared to run a QB sneak. And I understand I understand the trepidations of his previous injury, but that was such a freak injury. There is a higher chance of getting injured running this speed option than there is of him just doing a QB. How often does Drew Brees and Tom Brady and all these other elite quarterbacks do QB sneaks? Tom Brady almost makes it famous.
No, he makes it famous, and I think it's Skip Bayless, like, he's the greatest quarterback sneaker ever. I don't think you get any candy for that. But here's the thing, man. With Patrick being worth $500 million right now, I can't lie. When it comes to Patrick, I can understand if you put kid gloves on him, because, look, you see how Chiefs fans react right now as it is with the fact that he got, taken out the game the way he did. Chiefs fans will freak out over any and everything as it relates to Patrick. If it means, if it means that, hey, don't run a quarterback sneak. Now, I'm not saying you don't do the option. I'm not saying that you don't do what you did Sunday, because that was just a freak incident.
QB sneak was a freak incident. I mean,
No. I'm with you. No, I'm with you. But, and again, even at that time, I really don't have a problem with you running that play. However, here's my thing. I've always been of the big adage, if it's fourth and inches or whatever, and you have to run on a quarterback sneak, you can't get with your running backs, that's a problem within itself. That's just me being old school running back. But
sure.
But Patrick doesn't do the quarterback sneak often, at like a Tom Brady does. So to be honest, I would just say that is something that I think Brady has a lot more experience, obviously, with doing it. So, just because it's fourth and inches doesn't mean that any quarterback can go up there and just do, a quarterback sneak. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that premise. But would I call it again? Only if it's in a Super Bowl or AFC Championship game situation where it's, where it's necessary. I wouldn't just call it, second quarter of a Denver Broncos game in week eight.
I'm saying
that's what happened in the first game when he got injured last year in Denver. That's what happened. So,
sure, yeah.
If it was this game and games on the line and it means trying to get, to that next game or to take the lead or something like that, or to, run the game out, I'd have a problem with that call, because everything is all football is a situational game. And so, I don't have a problem with the QB sneak. I don't have a problem with the option. I wouldn't have called it, though, the second time around, because I think he hurt his toe after he scored the first touchdown.
So I
would not have called that play then, knowing his toe situation. So I don't have a problem with the call in general. if he didn't have an issue with his toe.
Yeah, I think that could be the most fair aspect right there, is he was already banged up and then you call that play. Randy brought up a good point. On Facebook Live, Randy says he's personally not happy with Mahomes throwing the ball to the upper deck. You know,
I don't know about that.
I understand the celebration aspect of it, and I guess in that case, as far as celebration wise, I don't care. But you could really hurt your arm trying to literally throw the ball as hard and as far as you can. As far as that aspect, I would say, okay, yeah, maybe Mahomes don't literally try to throw it outside of the stadium on something that does not matter.
I'm with you there, but I think the adrenaline kind of negates that, because if it was just a regular touchdown and he tried to throw it, then that's one thing. But I think because of the amp and everything coming out, hype and coming out trying to score on that opening drive, you know, People think I'm cranky on a lot of the calls and the things that the Chief says that the Chief tried to do. Yeah, but I have valid reasons to. However, I'm not going to harp on that, because I don't really see anything wrong with what he did.
Yeah, I just think that could be.
Plus, it's a free football for a fan.
Oh,
out
the fan's
going
to love that.
Hey,
I wish I would have caught it. You know what? Well, it almost hit me in OP.
I don't want to be.
That ball almost hit me in OP. It almost traveled.
He's stupid. No, I'm with you. No, I mean, we could nitpick, but, you know, all in all, again, at the end of the day, if Patrick is available, lines up underneath center on Sunday, and the Chiefs do what they're supposed to do, which is take care of business, and they, of course, make it to Tampa Bay, then all this will, you know, we would have forgotten about it.
The defense has really surprised me, because the defense in this game needs to be talked about more. Everyone's talking about Mahomes, and rightfully so, because that's the biggest question mark right now going into the Bills game. But looking back at that Browns game, that defense was exceptional for the most part. You could say they didn't get a ton of pressure, sure, but that secondary was outstanding. Juan Thornhill even had a big play. Dan Sorensen, say whatever you will about that play, he did what he had to do to make sure he did not score a touchdown. Talk about Charvarius Ward had probably not his best game, but he was okay. And then you get Bashaud Breeland and Lajarius Sneed. Both those two guys had fantastic games. So I think this defense needs to be talked about a lot more.
No. I mean, the defense is fine. You know, I think they did what they need to do, especially in the second half of the game when Mahomes went out. Because, look, when he went out, I think the Chiefs were up 19-10, and then I think they got the field goal, and it was 22-10, and then they got the touchdown or whatever. So the defense did what they were supposed to do. They held. You know, so they held the team to 17 points and did not put the team – or did not put the Chiefs in a bad situation to where they, you know, gave up field position. So, in that regards, the defense did what they need to do. But here's the thing. This is what you get paid to do. So, you know, it's hard for me.
Well,
it's hard for
sure,
me to.
I mean, you're talking about guys who came up. I mean, like Tyrann Mathieu, he got paid to do that.
He came up big.
And he came up huge. He showed up. But when you're talking about guys like Juan Thornhill on a rookie deal, Lajarius Sneed, who is a rookie, Bashaud Breeland, who's back on a very team-friendly one-year deal, and they put up performances like that, that's when I think you got to say, okay, these guys are outperforming what they were probably expected to do. You could say Frank Clark and Chris Jones maybe not living up in this game, but the guys who are on these rookie deals, these small contracts, they showed up.
No, totally agree with you on that. I would say this, and talked a little bit about it last night. For me, going into this Sunday's game, if you don't hear Frank Clark or Chris Jones' name throughout the first half of the ball game, that's going to be a problem. Because to me, and look, I know that's your guy and all, but there's only really Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, and Cole Beasley to an extent, because even you have acknowledged they don't have too much of a running game.
Yeah.
So to me, you can't let those three players beat you Sunday. And if those three players put up enough numbers to where they're beating Kansas City, that is a problem. So, look, we have – this is what I talked about last year. This is why we brought in Steve Spagnuolo for games like this. AFC Championship situation, obviously, and of course, the Super Bowl. Now, remember the talk when they played each other? I think it was week four, week five, when the Chiefs played Buffalo, and, you know, the whole matchup, the whole – you know, young quarterback matchup and the future and stuff like that, and whether or not this was the opportunity for the Buffalo Bills to take that next stand, and, you know, that next level. And the way you measure yourself is you measure yourself against the world champ. Well, Kansas City still went in there. You know, I think they rushed for 245 yards in that game. Patrick threw for 221, two touchdowns, no interceptions. You know, but Josh Allen was, I think he was only 14 of 27. So
yeah, he struggled.
Yeah, so whatever, and I know the game was in New York, and I know it's, you know, a little different because we'll have about 16,000-17,000 people here. Whatever Steve Spagnuolo drew up in that game, and I think Stephon Diggs may have been coming off an injury in that game. I know he had six catches and a touchdown in that game, but the same is going to need to be done. They're going to need to replicate if it means the pressure. And actually, what I'm probably going to do this evening is I'm probably going to go back and rewatch that game. I'll have to find it on YouTube or something, try to rewatch that game from earlier this season to kind of get, you know, kind of go back and see exactly what they did defensively against Allen in that ball game and whether or not they can mirror it this coming Sunday. Obviously, the crowd is going to play a huge factor, and I think because of what's on the line, I do not think that Josh Allen will have a good game, because I think that crowd noise, even if it's going to be 16,000-17,000 people there, it's going to be real loud for him.
Yeah, we actually noticed this in the stadiums that allowed fans, even if it is only 16,000, 17,000, it seems so loud because a lot of these stadiums and teams, they don't have fans. They're not used to it. I think it was up in Buffalo when they had fans. The other team was, you know, getting false starts. They weren't used to even hearing the 10,000 fans that were there. They weren't used to it. Having that year off almost made them, I don't know, nervous is what it seemed like. So I get your point here. I think it helps the fact that Buffalo had fans last weekend. I think that gives them at least a little bit better than, say, I don't know, I don't even know if Cleveland had fans the whole season. I got to go back and look and see who did and who didn't have fans. But I think that at least helps Buffalo a little bit having fans last weekend.
Yeah, well, Buffalo had fans for the first time this year, last week in their playoff game. I think they had 6,700. The Packers, I think they've had fans throughout the year, but not as many. So I think in Saturday's game, they had about 3,500, I think it was, maybe 7,000. So obviously, Kansas City has had the most fans being allowed, with I think 17 or 21%, which is about 16,000-17,000. So now I have been told that it seemed like there was more than 16,000. I've heard it
looked like
20.
It looked like it.
Yeah, so now look, again, I've said if I'm the mayor, you know, this week, you know, maybe I hold my nose, say, hey, fans, if you wear a mask, if you promise to wear a mask the whole game, I say 78,000, go to the game Sunday to make sure that Kansas City got, you know, but that's just me, I'm old school.
Tell Mayor Q just to say, hey, guys, everyone look the other way.
Just turn your back one time.
Yeah, turn your back. Hey, Mayor Q, you got to go out of town for a weekend. You got to go out of town Sunday, sorry.
Hey, trust me, if it guarantees Kansas City going to the Super Bowl, maybe the mayor might have a change of heart.
It looked like a lot more than 16,000 because I was watching on TV, and I'm like, are dudes sneaking in old school? You got one guy on top, one guy on the bottom, under like a huge trench coat, and then take it off once you get inside, because it looked like it was about at least 20 to 25,000. Like, it looked pretty packed, so yeah. It was pretty fun. And Buffalo, for their credit, I looked online. Ticket-wise, to get into that game on StubHub was like 10 grand. Talk about a fan base that was starved to see a home playoff game. If you're spending 10 grand in a divisional game, you're starved to see a winner.
Well, I know I was around a number of Cleveland Brown fans who were in town this weekend for the game, and I just asked them. I said, man, how much, you know, I said, I know you're going to the game because you got the stuff. I said, man, how much you pay for your ticket? Oh, about $1,000 each. I was like, shh.
Out.
I'm like, I love the Chiefs, but I'd be damned if I pay that kind of money to see them. I don't care if it's a Super Bowl, I'm not paying to see them like that.
Come on, like $1,000 for a game seems steep. It seems steep.
And I'm not even sure where they
Buffalo.
Were. Yeah, and look, I'm not sure where they're sitting. Hey, man, they they gave me a scare. I mean, they had asked me what I thought the game score was going to be. I told them, I said, the Chiefs are going to win. I just thought it was going to be – I didn't think it was going to be a 9-10 point game. So, you know, I gave them that much respect just because the Chiefs don't cover the – you know, they don't cover. Now, for Sunday's game, they're either going to win or they're not. I think it's like 3 points, so I expect them to, if they win, win by at least three. So
news out of the Saints camp that Michael Thomas is now going to have off-season surgery to fix that ankle. You know, yeah. He wasn't 100% ever since week one. He went out with that injury. I think that probably played a part the entire playoffs. Saints are done. I'm thinking Drew Brees is done. Was this the Saints' last chance? Was this their last hurrah to try and go out on top? Or are they going to have to tear down, rebuild? Or you think, hey, let's throw in Jameis Winston or see what offseason quarterback we can sign and we can see if we can get back here next season?
I don't think you need to rebuild. I just think you just need to move on from Drew Brees, and you know, if it's going to be Taysom Hill, let it be Hill. But I think Hill is better as a, you know, as a prime, you know, as a weapon,
as
a gadget. But no, I would turn the reins over to Jameis Winston and see what he can do. I mean, one, it's not going to cost you a lot of money. You'll save money by Drew Brees' retirement, and you can continue to add pieces around him and on the defensive side of the ball. Michael Thomas, look, he was unhealthy the entire season, and I was telling that to Steve when we were talking about the game. I mean, there was just – he just didn't show anything at all this season, especially, you know what, he just signed a contract extension last offseason where he got $20 million a year. I mean,
tell that to my fantasy football team. Trust me, I know about that.
Yes. So he was never. I mean, the only saving grace you had this year was Alvin Kamara.
Yeah.
And so, for me, give Jameis Winston the opportunity to run that offense. Let's see. First of all, let's see how good of a coach Sean Payton is without Drew Brees. You know, for an extended period. You know, for a season. Let's see how good he is. You know, we got a chance to see what Bill Belichick can do after 20 years without Tom Brady being there. And granted, you know, you didn't have a lot of talent, and, you know, Cam Newton was a shell of his old self. But I think, you know, look, you could come to a situation where what if they get rid of, you know, what if Brees retires, and, you know, nobody's even talked about it, but maybe the Saints go after Deshaun Watson.
Sure. I mean, talk about reloading. You have to give up a lot. You probably have to give up some players in that deal, but I think you can make it work.
Bye, Taysom.
As far as that Patriots and Tom Brady divorce, you could say, I think it's safe right now that Tom Brady came away the winner, victorious so far. Maybe the Patriots probably should have kept Tom Brady after seeing how good he's been this season. Maybe that the Patriots should have listened and got him some weapons instead of throwing out N'Keal Harry as your number one, because there's no wide receivers in New England. And that came to the forefront, especially with Cam Newton throwing in the football. But look at the Pats, probably should have kept Tom Brady.
I think the issue was, at the end of the day, Sterling, that the relationship between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady was such that he just wanted to get out of there. I don't know if you may have caught the headline last week, but there was talk of Rob Gronkowski after the season, initially, you know, calling it quits. But then I think following the win at Washington, he came back and said that he would love to play another year in Tampa Bay. So when people ask the difference between Bruce Arians and Bill Belichick, he said, "Well, there's a lot of freedom down here in Tampa Bay." So, you know, I think after 20 years, they just got tired of one another, and I don't think there was really, you know, once they did not give him the contract extension last year, and, you know, I think Belichick just kind of was like, that was just it for him. You got to remember, Belichick tried to trade him, what, 3 years ago when they finally got rid of Garoppolo?
But
Brady had took him to three Super Bowls and won two. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, that messes with your mindset. It's like, wait a minute, after all I've done, I mean, you try to trade me, and then I still take you to three Super Bowls and we win two? I mean, this is how we going to fall out? So, you know, it's a sad situation the way it fell out, but no, I mean, there's nothing, in my opinion, that the Patriots could have done, because they still, you know, look, we talk about all the time about how little Tom Brady, you know, look, he was the highest paid player on the team, but he was at like $20 million compared to, you know, players on other teams. And then you turn around and say, well, where's all that money going? Because if he's the highest paid player and
Robert
you got a
Kraft.
Roster, so it makes you wonder where the money is in the salary cap, because
the masseuses.
I don't know. I mean, that would be off the book, so I'm not quite sure about that. So yeah, so I mean, that's a situation where it was just long overdue for them to be separate. And look, people always want to know what would happen if Brady went to another team. Now, Brady lucked up and went to a team that was already stacked. You just needed, you know, a quarterback who didn't, as I said at the beginning of the season, quarterback who don't make the same mistakes as Jameis Winston. Like, Jameis Winston had 35 turnovers, 30 interceptions. Well, hell, if Brady has half of that and they're already 7-9, then, you know, I mean, hell, he can get to, what, 11-5 or something, you know, I mean, and do that, which is what he did. So, I mean, Brady did smart. I mean, he was either going to go there or try to go to the 49ers or maybe even the Saints had Drew Brees retired. So Brady always had, as a free agent, a nice landing pad for himself. The only place he couldn't come, obviously, was Kansas City.
Yeah, and you touched on it with Bruce Arians being very open and letting them kind of do their thing. I'm sure James Harden would like that. But I think that does do something for their mindset. It keeps players loose. Bruce Arians is a different cat. He's not a typical – I feel like NFL coach. He's not like Bill Belichick. He's not like Joe Judge. He's not like one of those guys who are going to rah-rah you up and get you. They go, we trust you to do your job. Now do it well, and I'm going to look like I'm an archaeologist doing it or a mad scientist, because he does not look like an NFL head coach.
Well, the thing is, you know, I mean, when you get someone like Tom Brady in, and granted, Brady came to you versus you going out really, you know, trying to go and recruit him, you got to remember I mean, here you are, a team that's 7-9, and what his famous phrase is, no risk it, no biscuit. And so Brady had to come in with the mindset that he's got to change his game, where he's got to go down the field, because that's his offense, you know, versus Brady with the New England offense, you know, kind of nickeling and diming and stuff and using the backs. Well, throughout the year, you know, to start the season off, it didn't really work out that way, and Brady was getting the blame put on him by the head coach. But then I think somewhere in the middle of the season, they kind of came to an agreement where they merged the offenses. You know, one, you got to make Brady feel comfortable, because at the end of the day, he's the one with 6 Super Bowl rings, and while you might be the head coach, you might have been there a few times, you know, a little bit longer than Brady. At the end of the day, the owners is probably going to side with Brady, because he's the one with the 6 Super Bowl and wins and 9 appearances. And so, you know, and the players have bought into whatever it is that Tom Brady is selling down there, and with the addition of Gronk, and then of course the late addition with Antonio Brown, being able to, and for Brady to be able to mesh all that together, all those egos, and then to where now they're on a 6-game winning streak. I mean, it says a lot about Brady. Says a lot about his leadership, and it says a lot about Arians being, you know, having, you know, being able to compromise with his ego. Because look, man, we all got, everybody's got egos, in some shape, form, or fashion, but if you want an opportunity to get to the mountaintop, and Brady, you know, is kind of giving you the pathway to get there, hey, you know, suck it up.
At the end of the day, rings talk. That's what it is. We'll take a quick break, though. We'll come back. Let's talk a little more Chiefs, a little more NFL, some college basketball. We'll do that.
Let's do
that and all more. So this is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM.
Give me a ho if you got your funky bus fare.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. Darren.
Yes.
I got a little funny story before we go into some more NFL and college basketball talk. I had some dry clean I had to get done. So I drop off my dry cleaning, and they're like, yeah, sure, we'll get it back in a day. They call me later that night, and they go, Sterling, you have sweated so much, we got to keep your stuff an extra couple days, and we got to use a special substance on it to see if we can get that bad boy out.
Gosh.
Yeah.
What?
Dude, I sweat a lot.
I hope that sweat came from working out at the gym versus doing something at the house.
I'm wearing dress clothes, Darren.
Hey, man.
Dude, I don't know. I was cracking up. I was like, man, they tried saying it so nice, too. Just be instead of like, you got a little stained right here. We'll see if we can get it out. I was like, gosh, I sweat that much. Don't play me in basketball.
What are you nervous about, man?
I just how I am. You don't want me to be skins. If we're playing basketball, you don't want me to be skins. We do shirts versus skins. You want me to throw that. Sorry, man. I had to throw that bad boy in there. But I do want to talk about.
You didn't have to, but you wanted to.
It was kind of funny.
You wanted to brag about
it's not
you
like bragging.
Sending people out to go. No, you wanted to brag about having someone go out and do your laundry for you.
It's $2.
I get that.
It's $2, Darren.
In this hard economic time, $2 means a lot to a lot of people, Sterling.
I agree. Okay. That's almost a zip burger out there in Independence. But I do want to talk to you about KU basketball last night because Mizzou plays tonight, but KU played Baylor last night. They did cover the spread, so thank you, Kansas, by hitting that last three right there, the little backdoor three from half court to hit the under because it was 77-69. The over-under or the spread was 8.5. And that got it to 8. So I do want to thank them there, but they got outmatched. Baylor is clearly, I think, one of the top two teams. We said from the beginning of the season it was pretty much Gonzaga and Baylor. We knew this, but who's in that next tier? We didn't know if Kansas was there or not. We didn't know if Texas was, didn't know if Texas Tech was. But Kansas has dropped a few games now. Oklahoma State. Now they lose to Baylor. I mean, and they didn't really look good. What is this KU team? What's their ceiling? Where are they at? What do you see them doing?
I see their ceiling possibly right now, Sweet 16, if even that. I think if they were obviously to go to the Big 12 tournament, well, that's all the Big 12 teams would. It's hard for me to see them getting out of the semifinals, playing in the championship game. I mean, it's funny. I was literally getting ready to watch the game last night, and it just died. Because I was thinking about a couple of people who I either went to school with or worked with when I was with the school district, and one of them was Ishmael Wainwright, who played for Baylor. And this something just died. It just popped in my head. I was trying to figure out, when did Baylor just turn around and just get good all of a sudden? And I can't figure out where that switch came, but, you know, these last 3-4 years, I mean, they've I don't want to say they've come out of nowhere, but the program itself, and I don't know if it's just Texas just being Texas, where they've started recruiting better athletes to come there. But, yeah, Kansas City, I mean, Kansas, they have not been let me take that back because they did. I think they went undefeated, if not lost only one game last year in the Big 12. This is just a down year for KU. So,
yeah.
As it relates to where their ceiling is, I would say Sweet 16.
Well,
I'll say
this about Baylor. They've been extremely good recruiting-wise for the past, I don't know, 10, 12 years. Scott Drew was a great recruiter for a long time. He always got a bad rap coaching-wise because he could never win the big games. He would blow the games against Kansas. He's like 6-25 against Kansas in his career. He does not win the big games, and he struggled in the tournament. That killed his coaching stock and why people never took Baylor seriously. Damn. They always had a top recruiting class. They were always like top 10, top 5. They had some good teams, but never got it done. This is one of the first, you know, the turnaround where they are actually better than Kansas, and they are proving it. Jalen Wilson for Kansas cannot score 4 points. If you want to win against a top flight team, he needs to score more than 4 points. He should be your number one scoring option. He shouldn't end up with 4 points on 2 of 7 shooting.
Abaji should be your number one scoring option, and then Wilson, just because of the makeup of the team. I'm more disappointed, I think, in McCormick. To me, somebody that big, that size, man, I mean, he's got that grown man physique where he should be down there dominating the boards down below. Again, we always see just how great of a coach with the X's and O's, Bill Self is. I just think that he compared to what's out there right now and with the COVID and everything, I just don't think he has the horses, man.
No, I agree.
It's just situation of this year, man. I mean, it's just a down year to where literally, you can see Gonzaga and Baylor, really, they're just a class above everyone else.
Yeah, and we don't know what Nova's going to be yet. And Texas Tech's had a couple good wins, and Texas has had a couple good wins. But this year just seems more than others. There are two elite teams and then everyone else. I'm with you. I don't think Bill Self – I said at the beginning of the season, I said, KU fans, don't worry. I like a couple of the guys. Because KU fans is a lot every year, but I think this time I'm actually going to agree – this isn't the most talented KU team. Bill Self,
not by a long shot.
And Bill Self's done a great job coaching this year. I think we've seen Bill Self have to do a lot more coaching to only lose by 8 points to clearly one of the two best teams this season. I think is pretty impressive, especially when your top or second leading scorer scores 4 points. Abaji, Marcus Garrett, and Jalen Wilson, solid. McCormick's been okay. They just only have a lot of depth. They don't have the same shooters. They don't have the depth they've had in previous years, and I think that's really coming to the forefront this season.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree at all. I mean, I've only been to, I think, the first couple of preseason games that they had, and then since they've had fans, they've limited the amount of media that can attend the games. So I haven't seen much unless I catch them on television. And, you know, even last night, I mean, it was either KU-Baylor, Nets, Bucks. I chose the Nets and the Bucks on that one, just because I figured the outcome was going to be what it was going to be when it came to KU Baylor. I kind of knew what the outcome was
going
to be.
Yeah, I will say Connor Braun going 5 of 6 from three. That's huge. And then Abaji going 4 of 7 from three. Those are two big steps in the right direction. If those guys can consistently hit, that's going to help this team. Mizzou plays South Carolina tonight. Mizzou's had a couple big wins already this season. They got back on track after blowing a huge lead to Mississippi State earlier on this season. You know, I don't know what this Mizzou team is. I think this is obviously a tournament team, Mizzou is. Until they play Tennessee again and some of the, maybe Alabama, then we'll see where they stand. They got hammered by Tennessee that first round, that first game they played them in. They need to play more solid teams to really see where this Mizzou team stacks up, because they have a similar situation of where they don't have a ton of great shooters. Mizzou's not going to beat any team by shooting them out at the gym. It's going to be good coaching, which I like Kwanzo Martin. It's going to be defense, and it's going to have to be Xavier Pinson and Jeremiah Tillman. If I was doing my like bracket rankings right now, I'd probably have KU as a 3 seed to end the season, and then I would have Mizzou probably around that 7 or 8 seed. That's probably where I see these two teams ending up. It'd be fun to see them in the same bracket, seeing they could play against each other this year. I'm not going to lie. I think that'd be extremely fun to watch. Again, as far as K-State, I don't think K-State makes it. If we're talking about local teams, I'm sorry, K-State. Don't mean to burst your bubble, but I think you probably knew that starting this season. But I think that's probably a fair judgment of these two teams so far. I think Kansas ends up as a 3 seed for March Madness. Mizzou probably anywhere from 6 to 8. Just based on that, the ranking right now is what, 19th in the nation. We'll see. They started off extremely hot, some good victories to start the season off, but that offense does worry me at least a little bit.
Yeah, look, I have not followed MU as much as I would like, and actually I was going to ask you if I should even bet money on them tonight to win against South Carolina. Because I'm not gonna lie, I think I'm gonna be more focused on what's going on in D.C. these next 24 hours than what's going on in the world of college basketball. Look, if you're Kwanzo Martin, obviously, you want to see what you got, and yeah. So with with the players that they have, and I guess look, I mean, one, you can't give a big lease like you did against Mississippi State, so. And I like to stay consistent across any sport, but if you got a chance to put your foot on somebody's neck and keep your foot on the gas pedal, you got to do it at all costs. Now, whether or not you have the horses for it, that remains to be seen, but yeah, at the end of the day, you can't give a big lead that end up costing you the ball game.
Yeah, for me, Mizzou is a veteran team. They need to make less mistakes, especially turning the ball over. I think next year is where we see Kwanzo Martin, what he is very capable of, if he is your long-term solution or not. I've been big on the Martin train. I think he's been dealt a tough hand with the amount of injuries he's had with Michael Porter Jr., Jonte, last year Mark Smith, and Jeremiah Tillman got hurt. So I think it's unfair when some Mizzou fans go after him. The goal this year was to make the tournament, and you are on pace to make the tournament. Next year is where you have to see that improvement, to see what he can do recruiting-wise. Because this year's your veteran guys.
And it's funny to say that, because I think back to our conversation that we had with the Lakers head coach that we talked to, Paul Westhead. And I always ask about the recruiting part, because, you know, to me, if you know the system that you're going to run or that you're going to operate, you need to be recruiting players that fit your particular system. And that to me is a question that I would have for Kwanza is, are you recruiting the right players? Are you recruiting the players that you can see playing in your system? Like, again, I don't follow MU like I do KU, but let's just say your point guard, okay, you got a senior point guard, okay, but if that's the offense that you are set on, when you're going out recruiting and you're looking at potential point guards, what are you looking for in that point guard? Are you looking for a point guard that's good, that can run that exact system, that when you get them in, hey, they fill in and they keep everything moving like clockwork? Or do you think that you got to go out and get, and you're just trying to get some name brand players,
some
and you
talent,
think you're
going
to bring them in, talent, and then you think you got to now try to either fit them into that offense or fit an offense that plays to their strength? So that, to me, is always a question that I would ask, going further to make sure, you know, not the season, but as you mentioned, next year and the years following. I gotta know your vision on that.
Well, I would say watch the game tonight if you can. Check out Xavier Pinson, the Mizzou point guard. Drew Smith has that YMCA old man basketball. They have two point guards, but Drew Smith is the old man YMCA up and under. He'll back you down, play that kind of style. While Xavier Pinson has a little mixture of AI with Jason Williams, a lot of flair, a lot of flash, and he is consistently always the fastest player on the floor. So I would say if you have a chance to watch the game tonight, check out Xavier Pinson. Do you want to take a quick break? You want to come back and talk a little about the NFL coaching hires, some of the GM hires that have been going around the NFL? I know you've been a little heated about this.
Let's do it, man.
Does that sound good?
You already know. Let's do it.
I know. I got to make sure that you're not going to get too riled up. You know, I got to make sure we're FCC eligible.
I got to get the people what they want.
All right. Well, we'll take a quick
100.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear Darren maybe violate some FCC violations. This is Darren and Sterling.
Have that dump button ready
on ESPN Kansas City.
Clap your hands, everybody, if you got what it takes. Because I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the breaks.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, Facebook Live, and 1510.com. Darren, it's your turn. It's your turn. I want you to take over here. With the coaching hires going around the NFL and GM hires to an extent, what has been your initial takeaway? Because we've seen a lot of surprises so far. So, I would say some surprises, some not. Guys like Robert Saleh, we knew he was getting hired. That was no surprise. Urban Meyer was maybe a little bit of a surprise. But then some of these other guys like, Brandon Staley. What are your initial takeaways so far?
Man, you would just put me in a situation like that, man. I have to watch what I have to say. And it's not even the FCC stuff. It's the stuff that we would say in the hood. Pissed. I mean, a part of me is pissed, but a part of me is also not surprised. We've talked about a year and a half. For an owner who pays $1, $2, $3 billion for a team, you can't tell them what to do. You can't tell them who they are. You can put all the stuff out here in place, but they're going to do what they're going to do. People hate when I talk about it on social media, but it is what it is, man. White privilege is real. Now, you Sterling yourself may not have had to use it or whatever. I don't even have an opportunity to use it because I'm not white. But the fact that this one of the things that upsets me, and one, Eric Bieniemy not getting a job, obviously, it sends me through the roof. But the fact that now the local media and people from our station as well pisses me off when I hear Jason Anderson, I'll call him Jason Anderson and Seren, where they're trying to feed into this Mike Kafka narrative because Adam Schefter a few weeks ago talked about how he's getting looks Like, for what? Like, nobody's asked about Mike Kafka this season. And so, you know, hearing that and to where now we want to talk to Mike Kafka. No, we don't. Because if I get a question in, my question is, what makes you think you're more qualified than Eric Bieniemy to be a head coach? You know, and so, but if I start to ask these kind of questions, it's going to go in a whole totally different manner where people's feelings will get hurt and stuff. Because for me, Eric Bieniemy he's checked all the boxes. One, you know, he was an OC in college, so he's actually called plays before. And to try to say that, you know, people say, well, he doesn't interview well. Well, if I remember correctly, I heard a story. Dan Reeves interviewed 10 times before finally getting a job with the Denver Broncos because somebody took a chance on him, and he didn't call plays when he was with the Dallas Cowboys. That was Tom Landry. So the fact that Matt Nagy spent a year under Andy Reid, got a head gig with the Chicago Bears. Mind you now, we didn't even know he was in the running for position with the Chicago Bears. The Chiefs lose that game to the Tennessee Titans, and the very next day, he's named the head coach of the Chicago Bears. Like, dude, your focus wasn't even on the game. Obviously, the next year, Doug Peterson, or it might have been flipped. I think it might have been Doug Peterson first, but Doug Peterson didn't call plays here when he was an OC. He got a head coaching gig. Eric Bieniemy, this is his third year as an offensive coordinator and can't get a job. And the whole thing with the Houston Texans, they are only interviewing him to try to appease Deshaun Watson, but it's too late, you know. So,
well, I think they said that he may be able to break some protocols, and they said they may allow him to do second interviews now, Bieniemy.
Well, because look at the uproar. But here's the thing. There's only three jobs available, right? Or two jobs available right now. The Chargers, the Eagles, and the Texans.
And the Texans. There's three right now.
Unless the Chargers, yeah, that's what I said, three. Unless
well,
the Chargers.
Wait, Chargers, I thought, may have gotten Brandon Staley.
Well, see, there you go. So now it's two.
And then Detroit. I don't know which way Detroit went yet. So Chargers hired Brandon Staley, which I don't think makes a ton of sense. He was a one-year defensive coordinator, wildly successful. The number one ranked defense in football, but the fact is, it's
last
easy.
I checked, Leslie Frazier is the DC of your Buffalo Bills, and I think
they struggled this
think
year defensively. They struggled this year defensively, but that's not my point. My main point here is, it doesn't make much. It's easier to be successful when you have Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, and the plethora of talent surrounding you. Of course, he is going to be successful as the defensive coordinator in his first year. It'd be tougher to not be good than be good when you have all of these players around you. I'm with you. The fact that Eric Bieniemy does not have a job being the most qualified, I think him and Robert Saleh are probably the two most qualified head coaching candidates. Wouldn't you agree? Those two?
Nah, I'm not going to say that because of Todd Bowles and Leslie Frazier.
But they've had their chances, is my point.
Hold on. They've had their chances, but Adam Gase has been a head coach twice.
I'm not disagreeing. Adam Gase should never be a head coach. I'm not going
to
go that far.
He shouldn't have been a head coach to begin with. But what I'm saying is, I'm not going to say that Todd Bowles and Les Frey, who have been head coaches, are less qualified than Eric Bieniemy because they're technically more qualified because they've already been in the position. So that's what I meant when I said that I'm not going to say that they're more qualified. At the end of the day, they've at least had the opportunity. Eric Bieniemy, Saleh finally getting the opportunity, but Eric Bieniemy hasn't even gotten the chance to have the opportunity. That's the problem.
I'm with you. The Urban Meyer one, I think, threw a lot of people for a loop. I think that went through a lot.
I didn't have a problem with Urban Meyer. It was just the facade that the Jaguars did. I think it was kind of like, I don't know if it was the Cowboys or somebody else that they kind of, you know, pulled the rules that we're going to bring these people in knowing we already have the person that we have in mind to be the head coach.
And then Arthur Smith, the Titans offensive coordinator, he is going to Atlanta. And then, again, Brandon Staley. I think Brandon Staley was the biggest surprise of a guy that you go.
Who?
But, again, did he have a great defense? Sure. In his one year there, I don't think it was Brandon Staley's defense. I think that was a defense already set up when you have guys like Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey there to make you look good.
But here's the thing. You give the white guy an opportunity. Eric Bieniemy has had Patrick Mahomes the last 3 years. He didn't even get the opportunity. big difference.
Sure. I mean, I'm with you. I think Eric Bieniemy, I hope, gets a job. I mean, I hope. To be honest with you, I want him to go to Houston because I want to see him with Deshaun Watson. I do. I want to see Eric Bieniemy with Deshaun Watson and see what he can do.
I do, too. The only problem is that Deshaun Watson doesn't want to be there anymore. And even if you were to bring Eric Bieniemy down there, would that be enough? Deshaun would only stay because they hired him, and he would be put in a position where, okay, we hired him. Now what you going
to
do?
Well, let's get to more of this tomorrow then, Darren. We'll see if Bieniemy goes to Houston tomorrow. We'll talk about that to see if Deshaun Watson will stay. This was Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, deuces.